time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 392 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Bob Sally is back this week, and he's one of the very best people to talk with about the industry, indie comics, Kickstarter, and many other things having to do with comics. Of course, he's got several projects going on, including Ogres, Salvagers, Broken Gargoyles, and many other things that he talks about. You can just feel Bob's enthusiasm for writing and the comics industry itself when we talk, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's always great fun to talk with Bob Sally, creator of Ogre and Salvagers, among other good things. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Wayne.
It's always good to talk with you. Why don't we dive in? You were telling me some stuff before we started to record. You got Ogre, which I really loved. In fact, I actually got quoted on the back of your trade collection.
Yes, you did.
Which I appreciated.
I appreciate your words.
And now, of course, that sounds like there's something coming after that. Why don't you talk about that to start with?
Yeah, so Ogre was great. It was a great experience for me working with Sean Daly. He's an amazing, talented artist, but he's also a very gifted writer himself. So it was awesome working with him. And, I wrote the script and gave him the script. And, you know, he gave me a lot of great feedback on it as we went through the pages and he did the layouts. And it was a wonderful experience working with him. If anybody listening to this has ever even met Sean Daly, he's just a pleasure to be around. He's very high positive energy around him. And we worked together on Ogre probably, he works fast. So I'm going to say like it's a 3-issue miniseries. We probably worked together on it for maybe 4 months. And during the course of the 4 months, like he and I became pretty good friends. And he lives in Toronto. He's Canada based. And Ogre came out at the end of last year. So it was September, October, November. And Fan Expo Canada, I went out there and it hadn't come out yet. But Sean and I, you know, it was finished. It just hadn't hit stores yet. It was out in Previews World. So he and I, you know, we went out to a bar. There was, you know, as it is when you're at conventions, everybody goes out afterwards and mingles. And he and I were just chatting, and he was like, "When's the next script coming?" And I was just, you know, I was like, I wasn't planning on doing another script. And he's like, "Oh, we got to do another script." And so, you know, that kind of started the ball rolling on talking about it. And, you know, and he'd mentioned, he was like, let's just co-create it. Now that Source Point Press is in Previews World, the reach that we have and the amount of books that we can sell is pretty high. So it's definitely, it's got that image, make and model, like where two creators can get together and they can make a deal on splitting royalties. And, you know, both people can make more money than, an artist can make more money than, say, you know, a page rate. So, he said, I want equity in the book. I love it. So obviously I was in the middle of starting another project, which, you know, if any writer is listening to this, or if you ask any writer when they, you know, when they hear that an artist is willing to work with them as co-creating, you know, you really feel like you have to jump at it, you know, because it's a great opportunity, especially working with somebody as talented as Sean Daly. So I came home from Fan Expo and I just started thinking. I never really had a plan to do a sequel to Ogre. And now thinking like, okay, I we're going to do another one. I didn't want to do a sequel. You know, I I did that with Salvagers, you know, the ongoing story. So I didn't really want to do a sequel with it. I wanted to have do something that would be standalone. You know, Ogre would be one story and another, you know, and we would do another story would be another story. And I was just trying to think of different things. And I just started watching True Grit of all movies. I don't know why it was just on the remake. And, you know, this whole child avenging their father just really like hit me. I thought it was, it was an old time story that, was classic Western. And I always appreciated what Rick Remender could do with his storytelling. And at the time I was reading Seven to Eternity, mm-hmm. which as I was reading it, I'm a big Western fan. Mm-hmm. I'm reading it and I'm like, this is 310 to Yuma. Just in a sci-fi fantasy setting, but it was done with such amazing storytelling that you didn't think like you never thought like, well, this is just a carbon copy. Like he did it in his own way. So I really loved. I never watched True Grit, and I mean my grandfather was a huge John Wayne fan, and I never watched True Grit, and I've always been a huge Western fan. So when it came out with this remake, it kind of seemed like a movie that I could sit through. I loved the Clint Eastwood Westerns, but I could never get into the John Wayne Westerns. So as I'm watching it, as writers do, we start watching something and we tend to kind of manipulate it into working for what we could work it for in a fantasy story. And so kind of started writing my notes out and obviously changing a lot of things. But, I loved the overall premise of the avenging family story. And I was able to make it so it would be a standalone miniseries that would be in that Ogre world. And then as much as I was a fan of Alien and Aliens, and I always thought, Alien is its own movie and Aliens is its own movie. I said, let's call it Ogres. And, we'll have a few ogres that are setting out to avenge, their village. And there is, if you've read Ogre, there is a moment in Ogre miniseries where, this event happens or they come into this scene and ogres will take off from there in a different direction. So there's kind of like almost like this intersection between the stories, mm-hmm. which I've always liked that in storytelling where if you watch one thing or if you read something and then you read another thing and then there's kind of like this window into the previous thing you've watched or the thing you've read, mm-hmm. and you always have to go back. You physically have to go back and either watch that movie that was before or read that book and pinpoint that moment where it's like that's where that's where they meet. That's the point where they crisscross. So I was really excited to be able to do that in Ogres. And Sean just sent me the layouts last week for issue one. And there, the one thing that Sean did say that his request was that there be more fantasy creatures in this next book. Hmm. So there's going to be, it's kind of like I said before with Alien and Aliens, if Alien was like the horror movie and Aliens was the action adventure movie, that's kind of going to be kind of what this is like. There's a lot of characters in this Ogres book, and it'll be a 4-issue miniseries rather than a 3-issue miniseries. When I was scripting it out, I just couldn't fit it all into 3. And so we ran with it, but we're excited. Yeah. So he's going to start the pages, and we will have a limited amount of issue 1 Ogres as con exclusives at Fan Expo Canada at the end of August. Okay. And with that said, it will hit previews catalog in September. So it'll be a nice little like promotional marketing advertising at Fan Expo Canada with the announcement and the release coming of Ogres #1.
Okay, very cool. So when does this start? When is number one issue? Are you doing it as a trade? Are you going to do individual issues and then a trade? How's this going to go?
So we're going to do it the same way we did Ogre, which was awesome. And it really worked for me. You know me, that since I started self-publishing, I used Kickstarter. You know, after the first two issues that I did on my own, I adopted the Kickstarter method, where it was a great way to build a fan base and distribute your comics on your own. So one of the things with Source Point Press and Travis McIntyre and I discussed was not doing Ogre as a Kickstarter and releasing it directly onto previews, into Previews World. And it was, you know, it was great. It was a success. You know, the book sold out. Actually, all three issues sold out. So I really like that. You know, it's I mean, as much as I like Kickstarter, I think that as a measuring stick for your career, you want to be able to see, like, can I move away from Kickstarter? You know, can I be with a publisher, whether it's a big or small press publisher, and can we, you know, successfully distribute through, you know, previews nationwide, you know, either whether it's through your newsletter, direct marketing through with comic shops. And it was great to see that, like, we were able to do this successfully. So that's my method now. Like, you know, obviously I'm still going to do Salvagers through Kickstarter and Shelter Division. People started reading it that way, so I really feel like I owe it to them for them to be able to finish reading it that way. But I really would like to, you know, move away from Kickstarter once Salvagers, you know, at least like the original story arc of Salvagers and the chapter one of Shelter Division are finished. I'd really like to start doing it where we release individual issues through Previews World, and then the trades we probably, you know, we will release through Previews World, but, you know, we're also going to book conventions and really trying to put a, you know, put a foothold on Source Point Press's novels and, you know, the trade paperbacks, which for a small press publisher is a little bit harder to, you know, to distribute through Previews World those trade paperbacks. It's a higher, you know, it's a higher price, and we find that comic shops aren't, you know, they will order some, but they won't order as many as like that high volume that they will with the floppies. So we're, you know, we're always trying at Source Point Press, we're always trying to, you know, figure out the market and see how we are doing in the market and how we can improve ourselves through sales and distribution in the market. And this, you know, 2018 was our first year in previews and we learned a lot. And it has been successful. Like, our numbers have been going up, and it's been due to, you know, really taking a look at the numbers and taking a look at, you know, what has been successful and what hasn't, and, you know, and kind of, you know, adjusting to fit the market.
Mm-hmm. Now, didn't Travis get some kind of an award recently?
He did. Yeah. At Cherry Capital Comic Con. It's it was a Gary Reed Award. Gary Reed was, the writer and the editor in chief at Caliber Comics. He was the writer of Dead World. And, you know, his history is that he established Caliber Comics, and, you know, he really kind of mentored a lot of people. If you know Joe Pruitt and James Pruitt and Travis McIntyre, like, you know, which, you know, you have Scout Comics, you have Aftershock Comics, you have Source Point Press Comics. So he was a big influence on a lot of people. And the whole story of me even being with Source Point Press was a friend of mine connected me with Gary Reed, and he and I were kind of going back and forth a lot when, you know, I was relatively unknown and I was self-publishing and not too many people, you know, would even really give me the time of day. Gary Reed always did. And he and I would go back and forth emailing, and I would show him the things that I was doing. And he was the one that told me to reach out to Travis McIntyre at Source Point Press. And at the time, you know, I thought that he might be just kind of like blowing me off or, you know, shooing me off to somebody else, you know. But I realized later that that wasn't the case. Like, Gary Reed really did care about the up-and-coming creators and the people that were out there really trying to hustle and make it in the industry. And he always gave really great advice, not just to me, but, you know, I know that he mentored, you know, creators like Casey Pierce, who does Nora and Pieces of Madness. Like, he really was out there to help the creators, and his award is a symbol to that. His award is, it goes out to the people in this industry who, you know, really go above and beyond to help others And Travis obviously is, you know, one of the best when it comes to, I mean, obviously Travis mentors. He's mentored me in this industry. He's taught me so much of not just in writing, but how this industry works. So he's long time deserved this award, and I know that that award meant more to Travis than any other award that he could possibly win, because Gary Reed was such a big influence on his life.
Because you guys have started, like, SourcePoint Press doing individual issues, where before it was almost always exclusively trade paperbacks.
Yeah, and it's you know, mainly because the individual issues sell better on, through Previews World. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing that we're, you know, that the advice that I give to people now, because if you're you know, if you're going through Previews World, there's you know, there's a kind of a math to it. You know, if your first issue sells, gets 1,000 orders, your next issue will go down 50%. So your second issue will get 50%, mm-hmm. and then the third issue again will go down. So if you're, you know, if you have a, and this kind of goes to like the strategy of like, if you're going to put together a series, like right now, for instance, I am doing a series called Broken Gargoyle, and originally it was a 9-issue series, mm-hmm. but with Previews and the way Previews works, you know, I kind of changed the script around, and I made it so it's three different 3-issue story arcs. So you know, it'll be Broken Gargoyles Volume 1, or you know, I haven't really come up with a title yet for the first three issues, but then the next one will be Broken Gargoyles Issue 1. And another title, and it will be different characters, but it'll be in the same world. So, and it's kind of exciting because it kind of gives you also a little bit of a freedom to roam around where you're not stuck. Like if you think of Salvagers, like I don't want to say I'm stuck with these characters because I really love writing for these characters, but you know, it's, you know, like that I you know, you have to keep going on with this core, these four core characters, whether you bring in, you know, these other villains and everything. So with Broken Gargoyles, it's like I can focus on a new character and I could tell their story even while it's intermingling with this whole, you know, universe. So, yeah. So, you know, if you think to yourself, I'm going to have a 6-issue series and you're printing, you know, 2,000 of issue 1, 2,000 of issue 2, 2,000 of issue 3, 2,000. And by the time you get to issue 5 and you only get, say, 300 orders in, mm-hmm. you know, eventually you're going to have a surplus of issue 5s and no issue 1, 2, or 3. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be like, well, how do I get, you know, how am I going to, like, what am I going to do with these issue 5s? You know, I can't give them away because nobody wants to read them because they're going to be like, well, where's the rest of the story? Mm-hmm. So it does. It changes, like, you know, the way that you think about writing. It changes the way you think about storytelling because you are now you're now hitting a different market. And, you know, it's not just being like, OK, when I was self-publishing, I was like, OK, I have, you know, 60 issue ones. I have 40 issue twos. Might as well order, like, say, 20 issue threes and 10 issue fours. You know, it's like, you know, you, when you're going to print, like, and you're a publisher, like, you know, you have to print, you know, the status quo. You gotta be like, I gotta get these numbers. So, it's the boring details of, you know, the brass of the company, you know, the suits that are making all the decisions. But, you know, to be a successful writer and, you know, to please the readers and everything, it's, if you can come up with a compelling story in 3 to 4 issues, you're probably going to have more success in the numbers, and you know, therefore you know, it's gonna, and I think also it's readers right now, for indie comics, I think that long, you know, epic series are tough to retain an audience for. You know, I think I always think I'm very lucky to have done that with Salvagers, mm-hmm. You know, and it's taken a lot of work on, say, social media to keep that fan base interested. And doing it through Kickstarter has helped too, because if you have readers that are falling off, you have new readers coming on. But it's, you know, I always, if I ever do a panel or if I ever talk to somebody and they say like, yeah, I got this 12-issue mega series, and I'm always like, don't do it. And they're like, well, you did it. I'm like, no, it was dumb luck that I was able to do it the way I did it. You know, right now, just come up with a three, you know, so a lot of times publishers will say, like, just come up with a one shot, just, you know, 22 to 24 page single story done. But, you know, I'll say, like, you know, come up with like a 3-issue miniseries. Because then even then, when you put it together in a trade paperback, you know, it's what, 12, 15 bucks. So it's, you know, people aren't breaking the bank to take a shot on something new and create their own.
That's a good way to do it. You're doing a balancing act is what you're doing. You have to, you know, I always tell people it's called show business for a reason. There's that business aspect of it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you've got to, you know, Kickstarter was one of those great things that came along and said, we don't necessarily have to follow the same model that we have in the past. We can actually sell it, get people to support it that way.
Absolutely.
I think that's great that you're able to change gears. Of course, you could always go back to Kickstarter if you need to. You know,
yeah.
Something comes along, yeah. And let's say SourcePoint Press, for whatever reason, doesn't want to necessarily pick up your thing. And I know a lot of creators who have books coming out from 3 or 4 different companies.
Yeah.
You know, they shop them around to different places. And, of course, if Kickstarter, I always say this in this podcast because I think it's true, is that somebody said one time that after Marvel, if you put all the books together that are sold through Kickstarter, they'd be the number 2 publisher of comics.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by that. But, this, you know, it's interesting that your experience is starting to shift and go in a different direction. That's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, right now Kickstarter is just this amazing thing. One of the things about this podcast is I get a lot of people requesting to be on and to promote their Kickstarter that I got. And I you know, I don't want to lose the thing about focusing on comics I think people should know about. But oftentimes Kickstarters are really good. I mean, you know, I had Ron Randall on a little while ago about Trekker. He has a new volume, yep, of Trekker coming out.
Yep.
And all these amazing things going on. If you actually go and look into these books, there's really good stuff.
Oh yeah, it's great. And I mean, and on, you know, I think a lot of some people kind of think that the opposite of what you're saying, that Kickstarter kind of is kind of going down. And I think that, you know, and I will tend to agree and disagree. I think that because when I started, Kickstarter was relatively unknown. Mm-hmm. A lot of people weren't going to Kickstarter. And now Kickstarter is, everybody knows Kickstarter. Everybody wants to get on Kickstarter. So I think that Kickstarter is successful with the people that have been able to, you know, build a loyal fan base through it. But I also think that because Kickstarter now is so popular, people think that Kickstarter is, you know, dying out. But I think it's just that there's, you know, it's diluted. There's really good stuff on it, but there's also like things that aren't so good on it. And I don't want to say, you know, not so good projects. I think that there's some people that that think that just because they have a Kickstarter, they don't have to work for it. You know, like you've seen some Kickstarters where it looks like people have thrown it together in a week. Where I know that most of the people that I know that do really awesome, like Trekker, I know he was building that Kickstarter, you know, over a month before he launched it. Mm-hmm. You know, I tend to start building my Kickstarters 2 months before I launch it because I'm so anal and I'll sit there and switch things around and I want it to be perfect and look like, you know, look great. But there are some people that think like, well, all I have to do is just put it out there, mm-hmm, and people will support it. And I think that that is the issue with Kickstarter right now is that there's so many people that are putting their projects out there on Kickstarter, and not everybody is putting the time into their Kickstarter to make it. You know, I always say like Kickstarter is it's a virtual convention booth, and if you're walking through a convention, and if you see somebody that has a table with no skirt, they don't have any banners, and they just have their book just sitting there, and when you walk by and you look at it, they don't really tell you anything about it, mm-hmm, you're going to keep on walking by. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a convention and you see somebody has like a nice banner out, you know, they have like a, you know, say a bowl of frickin' mints, you know, like come and take a mint, you know, and then they have posters and they're giving things away and they're interactive with you and they have banners that are showing their artwork and you're drawn to that. And if they are standing there, because Kickstarters is, it's, you know, people think like, well, it's on there and like, you know, you can't really interact with the people, but you can, you know, you can post things and you can talk about it. And you could, like, whenever I did a Kickstarter, I always said like every day I want to at least post one thing. Like maybe not on Saturdays and Sundays, you know, I'll give it a day of rest because there's not that many people out there looking at it. But my point was, I was like, I want to make sure that I never repeat myself. And one of the things I tell people when they're running a Kickstarter, if you run it for a low amount, you can constantly be updating. Like, you know, if it's like, if you're looking for like $10,000 and you're constantly through the whole Kickstarter, you're talking about like, oh, we're, you know, we're 25% away. We're 35% away. We're 45%. Come on, everybody. We're 75% away. Like that, I feel like that's like, it's great and everything that you're showing that progress. But what if you said like, you know, let's do it at 50, like $5,000. And that way we can quickly show the progress. And then we can say halfway through it, like we hit our goal. Now let's start going for bonus goals and then make your bonus goals low. So then you can, and people can see rapid success with your Kickstarter because success, you know, draws people in. And that, so that's one of my models. I think actually the next Kickstarter I actually do is going to be later this summer. And I'm thinking about doing like a 5-day Kickstarter, and it's going to be for the trade paperback of Shelter Division. And, you know, I'm probably going to run it just for like $2,000. And then I want to have like a bunch of like nice bonus rewards out there so people can get more. And again, I'm doing it because normally I would do it and I would just put it out there. But that's one of the ones that I started on Kickstarter. So I want to finish on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I want the people that have been loyal to me on Kickstarter, I want to give them an exclusive book, and I want to give them exclusive first dibs at, you know, things that nobody else can get. So if you look at your Kickstarter like that, you know, where it's not just for you, but it's for them, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the why you do it. You know, you're if you're doing it for you, it becomes very much, you know, a drag. But if you're doing it for them, you know, if you put this book out for them and you're doing this Kickstarter because you want to give these people that have been loyal to you a great story, but also you want to give them things that to reward them and say, thank you for following me. Thank you for constantly supporting me. Here's some original artwork. You know, here's some things, you know, some magnets or this or that that nobody else is going to get because, you know, you are backing me and you've supported me from day one and I couldn't be here without you. You know, that's a great, it's a great method to have. It's a great ideal to have on Kickstarter. So, but yeah, that's, I could go on and on about that. That's
Well, you know, you've had a lot of experience with Kickstarter and you've been a successful experience at the same time. So that's a good thing. You and I were talking before we started to record about some folks who are creators, they don't necessarily want to pay, say the writer don't want to pay the artist. They want people to get money out of the books or something like that. Do you want, you mentioned that you want to talk a little more about that. Why don't you go ahead and discuss that a little bit? Because I think that's an interesting subject that I think people are dealing with now more than ever.
So, yeah. So, I mean, I think like, you know, when I started, I never even thought for a minute that like, you know, you would talk to an artist and say like, okay, let's share this. Cause Salvagers was like my baby. And, you know, and I wouldn't even think about saying like, you know, let's split this 50-50. I mean, at the time, like, you know, I thought like, this is a gold mine. Like this is, you know, and you know, now I realize that was ridiculous, but yeah, I mean, I was like, I'm going to find an artist. I'm going to pay them a page rate. I'm going to do a work for hire contract and it's going to be mine, you know, like the artwork is going to be mine and you know, that's going to be it. But through my, you know, as I was self-publishing, I met a few, you know, comic creators out there, writers out there that were co-creating with other artists and, you know, doing the 50-50 split. And it was just one of those things that I think that as you're making your bones in this industry, I don't always, I mean, I think that it's probably not going to work out more often than it will work out, just because I think that, I mean, unless you get really lucky and you find, you know, that artist out there that really knows what he's doing and is also not kind of just, you know, I mean, when you first start off in comics, I don't care who you are. I can't imagine that any artist does their first comic and is like, it's just, you know, aces, you know, just like, you know, any writer, like if, you know, I've written a ton of stuff, but I never wrote a comic book before. And as much books as I could read about, you know, how to write a comic book, you really don't get to understand, you know, the ins and outs of it until you do it and you make your mistakes. And plus, I mean, how much can you make on a comic book if you're going to split royalties with somebody if you're self-publishing? I mean, we, you know, at Source Point Press, like, we're in previews and, you know, books, you know, we're lucky, you know, we're making pretty good money with it as creators, as, you know, somebody who's working for a small press publisher. You know, I'm not paying my mortgage with my comic book sales, but I mean, I take that and I say, like, if you're self-publishing, you know, you're making, you know, you're not making much to be able to say, like, we're going to split this. So, you know, that said, I think, like, you know, if you want to make, you know, a name for yourself, and if you want to really build yourself up, that it's worth its weight to hire somebody and give a page rate to an artist that who knows what they're doing and who you can learn from. I think that, you know, I was lucky to work with George. I mean, not that George Acevedo, who was the artist on the very first Salvagers, not that George knew what he was doing, but he knew more than me. You know, I was in the dark. I didn't know anything, but George at least had done a comic before, and he kind of understood, you know, things about, you know, like, you know, you got this or that, you know, like, you got too many page or panels on this page and too much dialogue to go on it. It's like all the balloons are going to hide the art, like little things like that, like George was able to teach me about. So I think that hiring, and I mean, especially hiring an editor, I think that one thing that new creators that come into this industry, the one thing that it's like the two things that they don't do is they don't hire an editor and they don't hire a letterer. They always, like, I did both of those. I didn't hire a letterer. I didn't hire an editor. And George lettered issue one of Salvagers on his own, despite his, you know, protest. I was like, just do it. And I think I posted a page, and my letterer, HDE, like, saw the post on Facebook and took it off of Facebook, lettered it himself, like, you know, just like, you know, not like in, like, you know, 300 DPI, but just, you know, off of JPEG, and was like, look, he's like, I'm not saying that you need to hire me, but good God, hire a letterer, because this is what it should look like. And of course I hired him. I was like, yeah, all right. But, you know, I just read a comic book from somebody that sent me their comic today, and it was a really cool story, but he lettered it himself. And that's the one thing I said. I was like, you know, this book, like, the art looks great, the story's cool. I was like, but the lettering, like, stops me dead. Like, I don't even want to, I don't want to keep reading it because the lettering is, like, so bad. And so I just said, I was like, you know, like, don't, and I noticed, like, in the credits that he lettered it himself. And I said, I was like, you know, it's, lettering's not expensive and it's so worth it. You know, I mean, lettering, you could find a letter for $10, $15 a page, and it is worth its weight in gold to, you know, to have a letter. So those are the things that I see, like, in the beginning, like, at the beginner level. I think that you're paying a page rate, but you're also paying for school. You know, you're paying an artist who's probably going to, whether you realize it or not, is probably going to teach you some valuable lessons on creating comic books. So it's one of the things I highly recommend is, you know, if obviously, you know, if you can find a seasoned artist who loves your idea and wants to go 50-50 on it, absolutely do it. But, you know, most likely you're going to find an artist who is just where you are, on the same level you are. And if you do that, then, you know, definitely if you can't find the funds to hire an artist and you do want to do a 50-50 split, then I would really recommend hiring an editor to, you know, go over your script and fine tune it to make sure that it's, you know, that it's properly written out with pacing and all that. I edited a book, you know, months ago, that switched scenes right in the middle of a page. And, you know, it's for me, you know, I'm sure that there's writers out there like Scott Snyder could probably do it and pull it off, but not all of us can switch scenes right in the middle, you know, or like having like, you know, if you're writing a scene on page 4, you know, the scene ends on one panel on page 5 and then goes into a new scene. It's little things like that, that I think, like, you know, if you don't know, you know, like if you don't know that that's something that, you know, is kind of stops a reader in his tracks, where he's like, okay, I'm switching over. It's, you know, it's worth hiring an editor to learn these things. So, mm-hmm. But it's comic creating is amazing. It's anybody that's listening to this right now that is creating comics, like, you know, we all understand the pain that we go through, whether it's the pain of like late nights writing or getting up early to write, reading, you know, writing a script and throwing it away and being so frustrated because it's not working. But I think it's the level of that we all have. I mean, it's like when you're at a convention or if you're like, you know, you're talking to another creator, there is this underlying respect that you have for each other because you know that like you're still doing it, you know, despite everything, you're still doing it because God, life would be so much easier if you just said one day, I'm going to quit making comics. Your life would be so easier. But that said, there'd probably be something missing in your soul that you know, that you let go of. So yeah, it's a painstakingly kind of process that we go through, but when you hit it, you know, it's like golfing. Like when you hit that perfect tee shot and that ball is just sailing straight down the fairway, those are the moments that keep us in the game and keep us writing. When you write something that you're like, ah, oh, that works. And you're proud of that moment, and you know, and you want to show it to your wife and be like, should we tack this up on the refrigerator? It's just, it keeps us coming back. So I love it. I love the group. I don't want to call it a fraternity because there's so many amazing women that are out there doing comics as well. But it's a group. It's a coven of people that we all are in this together. And I think that as long as you, as a creator, believe in your reason for doing what you're doing, then it's not a competition. You know, it's you're not competing against anybody. You are just excited to be telling the stories and getting them out that you are, and you're happy to see the success of everybody else. And that's what I love about this industry, and I love the people in it.
I have to say, what always drives me nuts on indie comics is that the punctuation is always bad. You know, commas, periods, you know. I always tell the story about there's a difference between let's eat comma grandpa and let's eat grandpa.
Yeah.
You know, and there are some people who just, I hit a brick wall. All of a sudden, I don't understand what they're saying. What's going on here? Well, one little comma would make a huge difference. You know, it's just some people just don't understand it, and that's why. If you ever look at like DC or Marvel, their punctuation's almost exactly right all the time. But indie books, I sit there and I have to sit and figure out what it is they're trying to say. So that's, I think you're right with an editor. If you can get somebody in who understands grammar, maybe you don't, but if somebody could come in and clean that up for you and make that readable, I think that would be a huge.
Oh my God. Benefit. Well, yeah, and I mean, again, it's all about the. When you're writing comics or writing anything, really, it's your job as the writer is to make everything around the reader disappear. Mm-hmm. And they are in this world. And if you do it right, they have lost themselves in this world for however long it takes them to read it. But punctuation, a misspelled word, mm-hmm. bad lettering, you know, pacing, anything can take them out of it. Yeah. And once you take them out of it, then they're like, oh yeah, I'm reading a comic book. And that if you can limit those things and you can get somebody to really just dive in there, then everything's going to be better. The characters are going to be better. The story is going to be better. And they're going to love you for that. And they're going to become loyal readers for that. They're going to always trust that whatever I read, like, that's why, like, when you see people, it's like Scott Snyder, I'll mention him again because it's like I love the guy, or Rick Remender. I know that when I pick up a Rick Remender book that it's going to be pretty much perfect. Like, you know, he writes a perfect book, and there's never a moment where you're just like, you realize like, oh, there's never that moment where it stops you, where you're like, oh, wait a minute, I am in the Matrix. You know, like you are reading it and it's just, you're lost in it. So, you know, it's, and that comes with, you know, messing up, making mistakes, learning from them, having editors, and, you know, and all that. So it's a fun process. It's, you know, writing comics is definitely, it's fun. You know, I love doing it.
Storytelling. It's, you want to tell a story.
Well, you know, it's what it is. It's, you know, I was watching A Football Life with Tony Romo. Mm-hmm. who, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia and I've always hated the Dallas Cowboys. And Tony Romo I never really hated because he just always screwed up and he always seemed like he was able to lose a game, even though he was a really good football player. But anyway, in this football life, he said something that really resonated with me and how I look at writing. And he was saying how he would go out in his backyard and he would throw the football and he would, you know, always be paying attention to how the ball's rolling off his fingers. And he realized that it wasn't about football. It wasn't about how far he could throw it. It was about overall improvement. And when he said that, it struck a chord with me where I was like, that's it. Like when I'm writing, no matter what I'm writing, when I walk away from it, you know, I always feel like I'm improving and like I'm learning from what I'm doing. I'm paying attention to the things that I'm doing right. And more importantly, I'm paying attention to the things I'm doing wrong and I'm improving from it. And that improvement is what really gets me off. Mm-hmm. Really like realizing like I am better than I was in the last one. So, and I think that is like the sheer joy of writing is knowing like I'm getting this because writing can really make you want to beat your head against the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was funny. I have to say one Tony Romo story really quickly is that I was a fan of the Washington Redskins. And, of course, there's this thing between the Redskins and the Cowboys. And, you know, the one thing we always used to say, as long as Tony Romo's in there, we know that Dallas will never win the Super Bowl.
That's right.
And, you know, almost so many times he sit there on the field with his helmet in his hands, just – and, you know, he never did win the Super Bowl.
No, well,
he's an announcer now.
So. Well, and I actually really enjoy him as an announcer. But the one thing was, I think it was the year before he got hurt and Dak Prescott took over, is they signed him to this like ridiculously long contract, and everybody in Philadelphia was like, "Awesome!
Yeah,
it's great! That's like they're gonna suck for the next 5 years."
That's what we said in Washington. We said, "Oh man, we know that the Cowboys are not gonna win the Super Bowl as long as he's in there."
Yeah, that's it.
It's so funny. So anyway, well, why don't we catch up on the things that you'd mentioned about Ogres is coming. Where's Salvagers at? Where's that going?
Salvagers, I feel like I really owe an apology to all the latest Kickstarter people because I said that I was going to deliver everything in February, and I think that I'm a little over 50% delivered on the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But life has really it's hit. Mm-hmm. And you know, with a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old and a wife. And I actually went back to work. I went back to my old job, which I'm excited about. I actually love it. And I think one of the things, it's been 3 years since I've been back at my, since I left. I left work to stay at home, take care of my son and write part-time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in the 3 years that I was away from the work, it was a huge 3 years for me to really put my place in where I am in this industry. Before I left, I don't think I was anywhere near where I am now as far as level of, you know, where I feel comfortable, where I'm writing well. And I think like with a fan base and I'm with Sourcepoint Press and, you know, it's I got a lot of opportunity, and I think at the time when I was at the job, I really wanted that. I wanted to be where I am now in the writing, and I struggled to get there, and I didn't feel like I had enough time to get there. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy with where I am in this industry right now. Of course, I'm always going to try to be improving, but it's been tough. As being with Sourcepoint Press, like we're on the road a lot, we're at conventions a lot, so it's been tough for me to get Kickstarter rewards out. You know, like normally if I wasn't on this podcast with you right now, I would probably be packaging and signing as many as I can. And, you know, and that might be with the kids and everything. That might be, you know, 10 to 15 comic books that I might actually package up and then, you know, hopefully, you know, in a day or two, get to the post office and then get them out. So it's been rough. I promised them at the end of February, and here we are now. So anybody listening that I owe a Kickstarter reward to, I apologize. They are coming. I promise you, they are coming. But, you know, that said, I'm working on Shelter Division. Shelter Division was something that kind of took a back seat. The artist that I was working with, he and I you know, he's a great artist and there was no issues there. It's just like, we just couldn't figure out how to get it going. So, you know, I got another artist to kind of finish the six pages for the issue that we were working on, cause I wanted to finish that. And then it's tough. Like when you're running into so many roadblocks with something, sometimes you kind of feel like, you know what, I just need to step away from it. And then, like, through going to conventions, I met an artist named Ken Perry, who Ken Perry is the artist on Wretched Things with Source Point Press. And he actually lives in Falls River, which is not far from where I live. So he and I ran into each other and we talked a lot. I really enjoy, like, talking to him. He's a funny guy. So we were just talking a lot and he just was like, so let's do something. And I was like, well, you know, what do you want to do? And he was like, well, what are you ever going to do with that shelter division? And I was like, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even want to look at it. And he's like, well, I really liked it. And he's like, if you wanted to, like, I could work with that on it. So he did some mock-ups for me and the artwork looked great. And, I was just at the point where I was like, you know what? I'll do a 50-50 contract with you on it if you want to do that and across the board. And he was like, let's do it. So, so it's back in production. He is a firefighter. So it's kind of nice because I feel like the script's all written and everything. It's more just like I need to fall back in love with it. And working with Ken has been great because Ken loves it. And he's kind of been reinvigorating my love for it back. And so then I started writing the next volume and being able to talk to somebody about that. I feel like before I met Sean Daly, I was very much alone with my writing. You know, like I would write a script and I'd give it to an artist and they would be like, paycheck, paycheck, paycheck. And they'd write it. And now I feel like I'm writing comics, you know, with the artist's feedback and the artist is as invested into it as I am. And it's really bringing out my love for it. So I'm really excited about it. So Ken is, I think he's like 7 or 8 pages deep in issue 3, which will complete the first chapter of Shelter Division. And as soon as I get this, all the other Kickstarters from Salvagers taken care of, Shelter Division will be put on Kickstarter and we'll distribute it that way. And then after that, I'm looking forward to working with Ken on the next 2 chapters, and we'll probably do it through Diamond because, again, I mean, I think that's the most successful way for me to get my comics out there now is through Diamond. So that I'm working on that. And again, I'm still working on Salvagers. The last artist that I had on volume 3 was Eric Goodell. And he, unfortunately, he's had some life things going on. So he needed to drop off. And so that kind of, it kind of put the brakes on things. But, what I did was I went out on social media and found another guy. His name is Edar Macia. And he's out of Brazil, I believe. And he's awesome. So I've posted a few things out there on social media, kind of showing his art, and I'm excited to work with him. You know, he's a new artist. It's the art isn't so different that you're gonna like look at it. I always say you don't want to switch artists where it's like Jim Lee and Mike Mignola. Like you want there to be some kind of similarities. So this guy has he's got the similarities. And it's kind of like a little freshness to it. So his art will end the third volume, which the third volume will end the first overall 12-issue story arc of Salvagers. And from there, we're talking about doing a little mini series with different crews. We did do a one-shot called Contagion, which David Hayes wrote, and Stan Yak did the art. And I did the editing to make sure it fit the universe, and it's a really cool story. David Hayes is an amazing horror writer, but he's also proven that he can write some pretty awesome science fiction as well. And he's one of those guys, when you're out at conventions, he's also like a pretty cool mentor. And that's one of the things, like, you know, being with Source Point Press and being out there on the convention scene, you know, it's great that you're working with people that you get along with and that you respect, and that if you're open, you can really learn a lot from. So Salvagers has I don't plan on Salvagers ending anytime soon. I really hope that we can keep it going. And that was one of the reasons why I was excited to go with Source Point Press with it, because I know that their commitment to keeping the story of, you know, blue collar science fiction going.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. Now, of course, you're talking about Broken Gargoyles is coming.
Yep.
It's in process. Any other things that you've got coming that you can talk about at this point?
That's it. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm actually working on I'm editing a pretty big book right now that I can't talk about.
Okay.
It's going to be really exciting. I know I'm vague. You could probably just delete this out. I'm really excited about it. It's
a lot of people do stuff that you can't. It's not publicly known yet, and that's perfectly fine. I like to know that kind of stuff, that you're working on stuff like that, because it's a good thing to know.
Well, you know, I've really enjoyed. So when I started working with Source Point Press, I let Travis McIntyre know that I'm interested in learning more about editing. I edited a Viking Queen issue by Paul Story, and I really enjoyed it. I edited a book called Parallel that's going to be coming out with Source Point Press, and there's a book that I found. There was a contest going on, and while this contest was going on looking for an artist, I contacted the writer, and I asked him, well, I see that you're looking for an artist, but have you found a publisher? And he said he hasn't. So I said, well, you know, what would you think about Source Point Press? And he was like, well, let's have a conversation. So myself, Travis McIntyre, and this writer, and these people who are involved in this book, we all got together and talked, and they liked what we had to say. So they're bringing it over here, and I got to do the editing on it. Cool. And it's kind of nerve-wracking a little bit, because you know, this guy's a Marvel writer. Mm-hmm. And he gave me a script, and I really enjoyed the script, but there was some things that, you know, like some notes and some suggestions that I'm putting in there, and I'm going to be sending it to him this weekend, and I'm going to throw up as soon as I hit send, because I'm like, you know, I'm me and he's him, and I'm going to be like, these are things I think you might want to change. And he's going to be like, who the hell are you? Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're right. Just keep it the way it is.
Yeah, but you know what? An editor, because when I work on Stabity Bunny and stuff like that, it was a book that I was working with Richard Rivera on, and he got to this one page where he wanted to make sure it ended with a great big funny. And I got to the end of it, and I said, you know, that's not really funny enough. I think it needs to be funnier. And he went back, and of course, now I'm not a writer like you are. I can't come up with the stuff that would make it better. I can just tell you that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And he went back and he wrote something much better.
That was a lot better
for the end.
That's good.
But it helps. You need somebody else's input sometimes.
Well, you do. And you know what's awesome is in one of the phone conversations we had, like, we weren't pressing him that he needed an editor. Mm-hmm. He was pressing us that he needed an editor. Mm. So he was – so and I love that, because I think, like, no matter what, like, if I – you know, if I was writing something and I was talking to a publisher and they said, like, well, we're going to provide you with an editor, mm-hmm. like, I would be like, awesome. Like, great. I don't have to go out. I have this girl, Drina Joe, who's editing Broken Gargoyle. Mm-hmm. And Travis McIntyre edits Ogre and Ogres for me. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, like, I would never I'll never write a script and not have it edited. So if I was ever working with a publisher and they were saying, like, well, we're going to provide you with an editor, I would jump all over it. So when he said that, like, when the second conversation he was saying, you guys mentioned that you would provide me with an editor, I was like, that's awesome that, you know, he's actively looking to be like, I want my script looked at. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. You know, we'll see if I know what I'm doing in the editing department.
Well, you might learn some things still. Just as an editor, I still find something and I go, oops. Yeah. You know, I should have done something else that way, you know, as I go along and do stuff. So as an editor, you're still learning too.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Language is changing all the time too, so you have to be real careful with that.
True. Wizard World, Philadelphia, with Source Point Press Booth, myself and Stan Konopka, who does The Rejected. The Rejected is blowing up right now. He just did Volume 2, and that hit the collector's market like wildfire. I mean, I think it's all sold out, but he's awesome. Like, I love – I can't stress enough about the people at Source Point Press that I genuinely look forward to hanging out with. I talked to my wife a while ago about this, where on my free time, I don't go and plan weekends away with my lifelong friends. One, because I'm really committed to working on my comic book and working on this comic book career. So if I'm going to have a weekend away, I'm going to be damn sure to see, like, is there a convention I can go to? But also because I look at the people at Source Point Press, not just Source Point Press, but the people across the board in the comic industry, like Jeremy Clark, who's an inker, a really talented inker. He did his own cover of Ogre Number One that he's going, that we're going to sell. But it's like, these are the people that we meet, and they're like friends and family of ours. And I genuinely enjoy hanging out with them. So hanging out with Stan, and like, I enjoy being around him.
Now, you mentioned about conventions and stuff. Are you going to conventions in the next couple of months?
Anything you
should know about?
Actually, and then August, I got Fan Expo. There's Boston Fan Expo. And then August, September, October, you got Baltimore, New York Comic Con. So there's a lot of, I need an admin. I need somebody to keep my calendar together. But then, in all of that, we still need to try to find weekends where, we're spending it with our family. So it's a tough industry, because to succeed in it, you got to be away a lot.
Yep, that's too true. But I was going to make a suggestion. You've got a ready-made crew growing up right next to you that you might want to start training them as to how to package things.
Oh yeah,
and things like that. Because when I was a kid, that was one thing they used to say. Kids were there to do lawn maintenance and other things around the house. And in your house, they might be able to learn. And you know what? This might come in handy somewhere down the pike.
Yeah, I like it.
Learn how to mail stuff and do that kind of thing.
I got my daughter crayons. I figured if I can get her to start coloring my comic books, it'll save me a bundle. So, and then I just need to get my son how to letter.
We got the Sally family.
That's it. Like the Partridge Family of comedy.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Bob, much success to you, and look forward to talking with you again sometime in the future. When things come up again, we'll have to talk again. It's always good to talk about the industry again and making comics, because I think that there's so many people who make comics now and do it. And there's a lot of really good comics out there that are not necessarily DC or Marvel. That it's great to read good stories that maybe the big two or big three don't necessarily want to do. And you're doing a great job of being an example for that, I think.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne. And as always, it's a pleasure. I feel like you are the Bob Ross of podcasts. I've said it more than once. You got that voice that people can just kind of, get their glass of wine and listen to this podcast late at night with the lights dim low. It's always a pleasure to see you and to speak with you. So thanks for having me on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.